Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Any meaningful relationship is based on the following. Trust. This is absent in Russia's relationship with the West. Essentially, Moscow does not deem Western leaders to be good faith actors. This is the lesson learned since the end of the Cold War. As we all know, regaining trust is very difficult, if not impossible. Crosstalking Russia's relations with the West, I'm joined by my guest, Garland Nixon in Washington. He is a political analyst in New York. We have Daniel Lazar. He is a journalist and author of three books on the U.S. Constitution. And in Philadelphia, we cross to Bruce Marks. He is a former Pennsylvania state senator and attorney for Donald Trump's 2016 and 2020 campaigns. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Daniel, let me go to you first in New York. There's no trust left here, okay? And if you look at Western media, particularly American media and British media, we're basically in a state of war, which, of course, one has not been declared. But they've made themselves co-belligerent in this conflict here. And, you know, if we go back a few days, President Putin in St. Petersburg at his annual event basically said, you know, his interlocutors in the West are not people that you can actually trust and believe. And that's the state of affairs right now. Your take on this. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, in 1997, Zbigniew Brzezinski, you know, one of the half dozen most influential voices in post-war American foreign policy, wrote a book called The Grand Chessboard, in which he called for breaking Russia up into three separate parts. Under U.S. tutelage, and then the U.S. would then use that as a springboard to penetrate into Central Asia and ultimately into China. So the U.S. has always had the goal, you know, either on the surface or it's lurking just below, of destroying Russia, of eliminating it as a global power, reducing it to a minor satrapy, and that's what we're seeing now. I mean, Russia doesn't trust the West for a good reason, because the West is out to cut Russia down.
Garland, the same thing to you, because I thought this was all about democracy, okay? That's what I always hear. You know, we have to make these countries democratic. Oh, by the way, as we speak right now, Ukraine is a military junta. And during this week, the last major opposition party was banned. And now there's one television station. But they keep talking about democracy. Garland, go ahead in Washington.
Well, and that's pretty much absurd in that the United States overthrew the government of Ukraine and installed a puppet government. So how could you both overthrow and control the country and argue that it's democratic at the same time? Speaking of which, one of the puppets that the United States installed was a guy by the name of Petro Poroshenko. He recently made a very revealing remark when he claimed that the Minsk Accords, an agreement between ostensibly the Ukrainians and a number of Western powers and Russia was involved in the negotiations, though not actually a party to the Minsk Accords. But Petro Poroshenko revealed that the Minsk Accords were simply a ruse. It was a fraud used to hold Russia off while the U.S. basically armed and trained the Ukrainian military for an eventual conflict. So knowing and understanding that, even though the West is talking about a deal with Russia and diplomacy, how could Russia possibly do another deal? They had a deal. And now we find out that the deal was just a head fake. So they could basically, I'll put it like this, I'll end it by this. There's an old saying that diplomacy is the art of saying nice doggy until you can find a rock. That's what that is. How can Russia possibly trust these people afterwards?
Bruce, weigh in on what we've already heard here today. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, with all respect for my American colleagues, this is just a bunch of nonsense. The United States and the West did not attempt to destroy the Soviet Union or to break Russia into three parts. The Soviet Union was a totalitarian country. It invaded and occupied all of Eastern Europe after World War II. What happened
I'm sorry, Bruce. So the Soviet Union shouldn't have liberated Europe from Nazism? Is that what you're saying?
They shouldn't have occupied Eastern Europe, okay?
Yeah,
and they shouldn't have installed
puppet governments. But Bruce, we're talking
in the East.
I said in my Bruce, with all due respect, please, with all due respect, I said in my introduction, since the end of the Cold War. Can we draw the line there?
I'm not the one who talked about Brzezinski in a book that was written in 1997. It was talking about trying to break Russia into three parts.
He did write that. He did write that. As we speak today, and you can check Moon of Alabama, as a fact check for me, go to Moon of Alabama, the website. There is a conference in Washington, D.C., exactly about breaking up Russia. Go check it, okay? This is not a fantasy. Daniel didn't make it up, okay? This is a fact. Go ahead.
You asked about after the end of the Cold War. And at the end of the Cold War ended, thank goodness, because democracy at that time prevailed in Russia and the Soviet Union dissolved. What has happened today is Russia, under Putin, invaded Ukraine. It invaded a sovereign country. You know, Putin has lied about what he's been doing in Ukraine since 2014.
Has the U.S. been lying about what's been going on in Ukraine? Let me throw it to Daniel. Go ahead, Daniel.
But you're ignoring my point.
Go ahead, Daniel. We have to have equal time for everyone. Go ahead.
The U.S. fomented an ultra-right-led coup in February 2014 in Kiev. That was not a bid for democracy unless you regard Stepan Bandera, the Nazi leader of the World War II collaborationist government in the Ukraine, as a democratic leader. So if the Third Reich is democratic in your book, then yes, of course, the 2014 coup was democratic. But it obviously was not. And the U.S. has been lying about that ever since. There has never once told the truth.
Okay. Is there anybody in this phone call who was in Kiev in 2014 other than me before and after the revolution? Anybody on this phone call who was there?
Were you on the phone call with Victoria Nuland and Jeffrey Piat?
I was in Kiev in 2014, before and after the protests. And Stepan Bandera has been dead. He was, by the way, killed by the Soviets, 40 years ago? He wasn't there. There was a public uprising against the regime.
Yes. So, Bruce, just to clarify, there are no neo-Nazis. There are no Nazis in Ukraine. Is that your position?
No, it's not. I'm sure there's 3 or 5 or 10 or 15
in the government. In the government and in the military. No. Okay. Yes, they are. Oh, yes, they are. This is well documented. Garland, jump in.
First of all, there's a logical fallacy going on here. It doesn't matter if you were in Kiev in 2014. It doesn't matter where any of us were at any given time in this universe. The fact that you were there doesn't give you some kind of a special knowledge. Either it happened or it didn't, number one. Number two, the reality is for the United States to overthrow country after country, to invade country after country, and then somehow argue that we are against the invasion of countries is absurd. And I'll end by saying this. The United States is involved with Ukraine on Russia's border, pumping weapons and missiles and everything into Ukraine. Same with Taiwan. Here's my question. What would the United States do if it was Mexico? What would the U.S. do if Russia and China were involved in the government, were training Mexican troops? We're pumping weapons into Mexico. We're making plots as to how to, we're writing books with the Mexicans as to how they were going to divvy the United States up. We don't have to ask the answer to that question because we already know about the Cuban Missile Crisis. This is about three world powers, one of them pumping weapons onto the border nations of the other two and then claiming that the other two are the belligerents. It's absurd and preposterous.
You want to react to that, Bruce?
Well, yeah. First of all, it does make a difference if I were there and you were not, because there was an allegation that the revolution that took place in 2014 was by Banderas, and it wasn't. I was in Kiev. I saw the people who were outside the Rada. And they weren't. Okay, these were people who came from all different regions of Ukraine. I know some of them, and they were protesting the president, who ultimately, of course, was corrupt and left and went to Russia. So it does make a difference if you're there and if you have a chance to speak to the people who are on the ground.
Okay, Bruce, let's go back to a point that Garland made. I mean, there were the Minsk agreements, and Poroshenko came out and said it was a farce. He admitted it. That's the whole point of the program. Why would the Russians deal with these people again? Because they lie. Let me throw that to Daniel. Go ahead.
Well, yes. I mean, of course they lie. I mean, this is naive to think otherwise. Look, there are statues or plaques honoring Bandera in 36 Ukrainian cities, including Lvov. There's a giant statue of him in Lvov. He is a national hero. He has been officially proclaimed a national hero. Zelensky recently conferred hero status on the commander of the Azov Battalion. The Azov Battalion is the only neo-Nazi battalion integrated into the regular military structure of any country in the world. Now, this is completely insane. There is a huge neo-Nazi segment in the Ukraine. It doesn't mean that all Ukrainians are Nazis, and it doesn't mean, by the way, that Putin's invasion was justified. But we've got to be very clear about who is acting here and what the history of this conflict is. And we have a government in Kiev which is heavily influenced by Nazi elements. And decent people should not be siding with that government until and unless it conducts a thorough purge of those elements, which it is never going to do, of course.
Yes, but Daniel, it's worse than you're saying, because the U.S. government is aware of this. They're not oblivious. Do they know this? Okay, we had Congress a few years ago worried that money would be going to the Azov battalion. I mean, they actually talked about it. So it's not a mystery here. All right, gentlemen, we're coming up to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Russia's relations with the West. Stay with RT.
The Second World War affected millions of people. During the conflict, the balance of power was held by the leaders of three nations: the United Kingdom, the United States, and the USSR.
Der bis dahin in der Geschichte der Menschheit größte Krieg gab es noch nicht.
Because Hitler was weak and knew he was weak and he was bluffing.
He was the major political figure, certainly one of the most prominent political leaders of the 20th century.
When we support the Germans, and if the Germans are winning, we support the Russians, and that way let them destroy each other. So there was that kind of sentiment in the West at this time.
The redrawing of European borders had begun. Britain and the United States allegedly planned to attack the USSR. For Britain to survive, Russia had to be sacrificed.
Dieses Doppelspiel eigentlich der Westmächte.
Польша, она создала тот самый холодок, с которого начиналась холодная война.
The Cold War had begun.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Russia's relations with the West. Okay, let's go back to Bruce. Obviously, the odd man out here, and that's why I want to make sure we hear your opinion here. Do you want the United States and Russia, the West in general, and Russia to have good relations? Is that a goal do you think is worthy?
I think it would be outstanding. And, Peter, I appreciate your fairness in coming to me. Yes, I do. I mean, I'm somebody who lived in this, in Moscow during the Soviet period. I've had a law firm in Russia since 1998. I've seen the dissolution of the Soviet Union and everything good that's happened because of that. I'd very much like to see better relations between the United States and Russia.
So how do we get there? How do we get there?
Well, it's a very fraught issue. And number one, I think that Russia needs to pull its troops out of Ukraine. I mean, it's an invading force. It's gone into areas of Ukraine, which are clearly sovereign parts of Ukraine, attempted to bomb Kiev. They've occupied the whole southern strip of Ukraine along, the Black Sea. I think they've got to pull their troops out. I think if they don't pull their troops out, then it's going to be very hard, certainly in the short term, to improve relations, because I think the United States and the West are going to continue to support Ukraine's defense militarily.
Okay, but I want to see good relations between the two countries here. Let me go to Garland here. But I mean, I don't need to go back to ancient history. I just need to go back a few months. Let's go back to December 17th, and Russia sent a note to NATO and to the United States saying, hey, the security situation in Europe is untenable for us. We have red lines here. We have two proposals. Oh, you can call them ultimatums if you want. I don't care. But they said the situation is untenable. The status quo cannot be maintained. And what did Western leaders do? They didn't do anything. They didn't take it seriously. We heard there will be a military technical reaction. And you know what? It happened. And that's why I see that it's very, very difficult for at least the Russian side to take the Western side seriously, because they did propose something to sit down and really talk, and that was completely dismissed out of hand. That's how we got here. Garland.
Yeah, and we have to understand something. This is bigger, much larger than just Ukraine. This is about the U.S. having hegemonic intentions. This is about the U.S. being able to dictate the rules of order for the entire world. And this is about Russia saying, no, not here, not now, not anymore. So, in my opinion, what we're looking at here is the development of a new world order. The U.S. and NATO is nothing but an umbrella organization. So that the U.S. can bring all of its vassals together and take power of attorney for the EU and for their foreign policy, but basically saying, for the most part, Libya or whatever country we're angry at, do what we tell you, or we will use our power to destroy you. And now the U.S. empire has run up against another world power, which has grown powerful enough to say no. And the U.S. doesn't know how to deal with that. And the interesting thing is that the U.S. and NATO are committing economic suicide.
Yes, they are.
They're swallowing poison and waiting for Russia to die. And that's not going to happen.
Daniel, we hear about the rules-based order. If you know what that means, please tell me, because I cannot figure out what it means, okay? Everything that comes out of the State Department now, I need a translator, because I have no idea what they're talking about. But, let's talk about the rule of law. Seizing of private individuals' properties, seizing of bank accounts, even of the Russian government. I mean, how is that rule-based order, okay? I mean, how can you trust people that are just going to buy fiat steel? Okay, because that's what it is. It's theft.
Yes, I mean the rules-based order means that America makes the rules and everybody else snaps too. I mean, look at it. In November of 2021, the U.S. and the Ukraine signed a joint statement in which they said their strategy was to take back the Crimean Peninsula and the Donbass. Could you imagine if Russia and Syria had signed a document saying that their joint strategy was to take back the Golan Heights from Israel? I mean, the U.S. would have gone completely bonkers. So this idiotic rules-based order is essentially a double standard. It's one standard for the U.S., a second standard for Europe, and a third standard for all those countries that sort of wind up in America's crosshairs. And the problem is that though that third category now includes a majority of the world, which is why the majority of the world is refusing to line up behind the U.S. in this conflict in the Ukraine. So the U.S. essentially has backed itself into a corner. Its policies are so absurd and contradictory that no one is going to follow them. No one can even figure out what they even mean. So the U.S. actually finds itself in a growing minority. And meanwhile, Garland is totally right. The economy is imploding. And as the New York Times said yesterday or the day before, I mean, the sanctions have completely backfired. So this is one of the really most egregious screw-ups in foreign policy, U.S. foreign policy, of the last 20 or 25 years. And considering that includes the invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq, that is saying a great deal.
Bruce, I mean, how is current U.S. strategy, NATO strategy, European Union strategy, ultimately helping Ukraine? Because I have noted on this program a number of times, the more the West helps Ukraine, the smaller it gets, and it's the smaller its population becomes. Bruce.
Well, I mean, one obvious answer is if the United States and the West hadn't helped Ukraine, Russia would have taken over Kiev, would have taken over the entire country. So as a result of us providing military support to Ukraine, they beat off the attempt to take over Kiev.
We don't know that. We don't know that, Bruce.
We don't.
I don't know where. But see, this is one of these Western media memes. So everybody knows what the general staff of Russia, its war aims were. Nobody knows that. Okay. And so this is a myth that's being built up. Snake Island, another myth. And then this fighter, you know, the ghost of Kiev, another myth. They didn't even admitted it was a myth.
But Peter, Bruce is right.
Have you been in Kiev? I have. Have you seen the bombing there?
If the Russian general staff wanted to destroy Kiev, it would have been done in one day. But they don't want to do it. Bruce, don't you find it comical, Bruce, that Macron and Johnson and all these European officials, they waltz around Kiev in the middle of a war? No, and it's absurd on its face. People sitting out in cafes. It's absurd what you're saying.
Well, that's because they beat back the invaders. That's because the Russians are no longer in European, although, of course, there's a lot of bodies that the Russians killed that are still there. So the answer
allegedly. What happened to that? You're a lawyer. You don't use his terms anymore. Has there been an investigation? Has it been conclusive? Has it been corroborated? Have there been third parties? None of the above. Okay. Alleged.
There's a lot of alleged dead bodies. You haven't seen the photographs of the dead bodies.
I've seen them. I've seen photographs. I see a lot of photographs and video coming out of Kiev, officially sponsored. Daniel, you wanted to jump in there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, look, Peter, Bruce is right. I mean, there's little doubt to any, from the point of view of any neutral observer, that Russia was stopped at the outskirts of Kiev.
I disagree with you guys.
Hold it.
None of us are military strategists. Okay, so let's leave. Fine.
But there's no doubt that Russia encountered resistance that was a good deal stiffer than it expected, and it found itself stymied for a while. Now Russia has recovered; it's recovered the edge of the war. It recovered the strategic edge in this war. So I think that Bruce is correct that U.S. Western weapons did have an impact, but that impact is running out, and Russia now is on the offensive.
Well, I have to wait for future historians to figure this out here. Anyway, Garland, you want to jump in? Go ahead.
Yeah, number one. Number two, you know, to judge any game in the first quarter is irrelevant. At the end of this, to say that the Russians haven't taken Kiev, well, once the war is over, you can say that. But right now, to say that the Russians have or haven't done anything as the war goes on is preposterous. But here's my point also. The contradictions abound. Yeah, and so now all of a sudden Bruce is saying the U.S. is concerned about dead bodies, a million dead people in Iraq, a million dead people. Now all of a sudden we're concerned about dead bodies in Ukraine. And might I add, if we have any concern about the Ukrainians, there is a way to stop that. There's always been a way to stop that. And that way was through diplomacy, and the U.S. has rejected diplomacy. And I'll add one more contradiction. The United States recently said that they had concern about China having military bases in the Solomon's Island and said they wouldn't rule out a military assault on the Solomon's Island. The United States drew a red line 7,391 miles from their shore that included a possible military response, but the Russians can't draw a red line 1/1,000,000,000th of a millimeter from their border, which is Ukraine. Again, the contradictions abound.
All right, we have 1 minute left and I want to give it to Bruce. Go ahead, Bruce.
Well, I think, you know, Daniel was right. I mean, there was the invasion of Ukraine was stopped on the, you know, near Kiev. But I also think that both of my colleagues are right. We don't know where this is going. It is only the first quarter. And that's a frightening aspect, because I do think that Russia for now does sort of have an edge in the southern and the eastern parts of Ukraine. And I would like to see diplomacy, but I think it's going to require Russia to withdraw from portions of Ukraine that it's recently invaded. But I'm all for diplomacy.
Yeah, I wish the West were interested in diplomacy, because if they don't, gentlemen, there might not be a Ukraine at the end of all this. And I think that's it's a growing likelihood, unfortunately. Diplomacy is the only way, and no one in the West is talking about it, unfortunately. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Washington, New York, and in Philadelphia. I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.